nice when something happens in your life that's painful and you just kind of move through it like that. You could just be really optimistic about it and sort of change it so it doesn't hurt so bad. My friend yesterday gave the talk at his younger sister's funeral. And I saw her just 3 months ago. She looked just as healthy as could be. And you don't sort of just slide past that kind of pain. And in life, it's not if we'll have pain, it's when we'll have pain. Most of us have seen that movie, The Princess Bride, at least all the girls have seen that movie, and Buttercup yells out, "You mock my pain!" And Wesley says, "Highness, life is pain. Anybody tells you anything different, they're trying to sell you something." And I don't know if life is pain, but I know there's a lot of pain in life. And it always takes you somewhere, and the question is, what will my pain cause? I'm Robin, I'm the pastor here. Welcome to Eastlake, good to have you. We're in this series called Greater Than. The topic today is pain, and the idea is God is greater than my pain. Here's the big idea, write it in your notes. God turns hurt into hope. He never wastes a hurt. He can take my pain and my hurt and turn it into hope. So if you've come today and there's something that's rattling around and it's painful, or you know somebody and it's painful, here's the great, great news. God can get in the middle of your hurt and turn it into hope. And today we're going to take a look at a story about a person in the Bible. His name is Paul, and he knows a lot about pain. Pain that comes when you mistreat other people. But Paul was like this big wig in the Jewish church. He lived at a time where the Jewish church in Israel kind of ran everything, and Paul had worked his way up, and he was like a real top guy in the Jewish church. And his assignment was to try to stop this little movement that had become, you know, sort of a bother to them. There was a Jewish carpenter, his name was Jesus, and they thought they did away with him. They put him up on a cross, and this story begins to circulate that he didn't stay dead, that there was a resurrection that occurred, and all these different people saw him. And so they said, "Paul, once and for all, you have to, you know, stop this little movement." And boy, this is an aggressive guy. This is a linebacker type guy. I mean, he has people arrested. And he has people thrown into jail. And he has people even executed. And in the middle of this whole thing, and can you imagine if you're that guy? I mean, like a lot of guys, you put on this sort of a tough front. But, on the inside, it can be different. It's like the girl's boyfriend doesn't like cats. And so she has a cat, and he kind of puts up with this cat. And they get engaged. He's teasing her. And I can't wait until we get married so I can take that cat down to the river where cats belong, in the water, and I don't like your cat. And they get married, and she's, "No, the cat's staying." You know, he moves into her place, and always talking bad about this cat. And then one night she wakes up late at night. She thinks she hears something, and she goes into the kitchen, and there he is, knelt down with a saucer of milk, scratching the cat's neck. In secret, "Hey, little baby, daddy loves you." Then he sees her, just playing. Guys are like that. And Paul was like that, and we're all like that. You know, some of the worst pain is the pain that I go through when I know that I've hurt someone else. That's a lot of pain. You might be there today, you did something, and you know it hurt somebody else, and now you're hurting because of it. And there's an old saying, hurt people, and you know, we're all in that. This is a safe place, by the way, for you to come to church, because this is a church for everyone. Every type of person can come here, regardless of how much pain you've caused other people. You're welcome here, because we've all been there. And Paul, can you imagine when, you know, all the things that he saw when he was, like, you know, persecuting this little band of believers? And then here's the great irony of his story. Right in the middle of it, he has an encounter with a Jesus, and all Jesus asks him is, why are you treating me this way? It's almost like he said, "Paul, you don't even know me." And it just arrests him. And Paul goes from big church leader guy to joining the little band of followers. And, of course, they're not sure what to do with him because he's been the bad guy. And so now he starts to go through the pain of rejection. And of course, the church people, they control everything. They're really super mad at him. You're a turncoat. You're a traitor. You know, and so they hound him. And pretty soon, you know, Paul, I mean, he gets in fights and he gets arrested and he gets thrown in jail. He'd make like the perfect Raider fan. And he knows what it's like to go through the type of pain when you've been rejected just because of what you believe or how you want to live your faith or what you think about God. He knows all about that kind of pain, too, and possibly maybe you know someone like that. You know, you've seen them. They're hurting because of, you know, choice, and that's Paul. And he's in this courtroom, and they decide this time we're going to really get him, and they decide that they're going to send him all the way to Rome. Now, he lives in Jerusalem, which is the Middle East, and they're going to send him all the way to Rome to trial, which means he has to hop a boat and go all the way across the ocean, way up into Italy. And today, we're going to take a look at a story about what happens to him when he's on that boat, because there's all kinds of things to learn about how Jesus gets in the middle of my pain. So let's take a look here. We'll look at this first part. Right, here's Paul talking. We had lost a lot of time. The big idea, God turns hurt into hope. We'd lost a lot of time. They're bouncing from port to port. It's wintertime, and they're trying to decide, do we keep going towards Rome or should we stop? And so he says, we've lost a lot of time. The weather was becoming dangerous for sea travel because it was so late in the fall, and Paul spoke to the ship officers about it. Many said, I believe there's trouble ahead if we go on. Shipwreck, loss of cargo, and danger to our lives as well. And I don't know, you probably have never been in a shipwreck. I've never been in a shipwreck, but I've had relational shipwrecks where I thought I was in a relationship and it was going to be solid and it was going to be good and everything was going to turn out okay. And then a storm came up and it just tore the ship apart. And now I'm drowning in the pain of the relationship didn't work out. I've been in financial shipwrecks. You think everything's going along just great. And then they call you up and say, good news. It's not your head gasket. It's your transmission. It's only going to be $3,000. Good news. Have you ever had anybody ever say this to you? They say to you, I hate to tell you this. And as they say it, it sounds like it's the happiest day of their life. You ever had that happen? Good news, you know. I've had emotional shipwrecks where I was even keeled, and all of a sudden you wake up and you just don't have your zip in life. You can't find your zip in life. You count on that extra burst of energy that you always have, and then one morning you wake up and it's just not there. And you drink, you know, like 9 of these, you know, Red Bulls, and you can't buy emotion, and it's just not there. Shipwrecks. And Paul gets in this shipwreck, and there's a couple things we'll see in the story, and it really helps in how we understand that God is greater than my pain. So write number one, find the reason. And it's really important to find the reason so things just don't get repeated over and over and over and over again, so I just don't keep going around the same mountain, making the same choices, ending up in the same drama and the same pain. I have to find out the reason. And two questions we can ask ourselves. These two will really look in your notes and just follow along in this. Here's the question number one. Who made the wrong choice? There's pain in my life. Who made the wrong choice? And listen to me. It's not always you. There's a lot of pain that I go through because of somebody else's choice. I didn't make a bad choice. But I'm still in pain. And you can beat yourself up and you can beat yourself down and nothing's going to change because sometimes it's not your fault. Paul's going to go through a ton of pain in this story and he didn't make any bad choices. Because sometimes we go through things and they're very, very painful. It's not our fault. And sometimes when you go through pain, it's difficult to know who to blame. You know, it's you try to figure it out, who made the wrong choice, and it can be very, very difficult to know who to blame, who's the one that made the bad choice. And it is difficult to look at my own life and those times when you say, well, it is my fault. This the woman that was explaining that she never gets to see her daughter. Her daughter's growing up, and she never gets to see her daughter. And she said, you know, I know the day is coming. I know the day is coming when my daughter is going to ask me someday. She's going to be a teenager, or she's going to come to me someday, and she's going to say, Mom, how come you were never there on my birthday? You never called me. You never were around. You don't live that far away. And she says, that's what I'm going to tell her. It's because of your father. The dude was wacko, crazy. Your dad was crazy, and I just couldn't handle him. And you listen to her say it, and it's like she can almost buy it that that's going to work, but you just know at a little deeper level, because she's been told things like that before, you just know that she knows at a deeper level, that's not going to work with my daughter. That's not going to make her pain go away. Or sometimes it's safer to blame the wrong person. Maybe you've done that. I love my dad so much, and my dad's always there for me, and so I blame my mom, or I don't like blaming my older sister, so I blame my brother, or I blame the wrong boss at work, because if I blame the right boss at work, he's mean and angry, and he might fire me. So there's an African proverb about a little story about the family of leopards, and one of the little leopard cub went too far away from the family, and a big herd of elephants got spooked, and they ran by and they trampled the little cub, the little leopard, and he died. And the father leopard had been hunting, and he comes home and he hears that his son has been killed by these elephants. He just goes into a rage, and he's just running back and forth and up in a tree and jumping. These elephants are just over a little cliff down in a little flat area, and he just charges towards that cliff. He's like, whoa, he's going to attack the elephants. He just runs, he just charges, and right as he's about to leap off this cliff, he just stops. He looks at those elephants, and he just starts pacing back and forth, looking at them, pacing. And he notices a little herd of goats off to the left, and he stares at that goats, and all of a sudden they hear the father leopard scream, it was the goats! It was the goats that killed my son! And he ran down and he attacked the goats. Are you in pain because someone attacked you because you were just an easy target? Should have been somebody else. Ended up being you. Maybe you're just a little nicer, a little easier to talk with. And you got the brunt of it all. Well, it's important to try to figure it out. Who made the wrong choice? Who did? I'm in pain, and who made the wrong choice? It says in the scripture, it says, but the officer in charge of the prisoners listened more to the ship's captain and the owner than to Paul. And the wrong choice we're going to see in a moment. And right in your notes, the second question, did I pick a wrong path? So the first one is, who made a wrong choice, figured out. And the second one is, did I pick a wrong path? The majority decided, it's in your notes, the majority decided that we should sail on, circle the majority. How many times have I got into pain because I listened to the majority? When a light wind began blowing from the south, the sailors thought they could make it. Famous last words, they thought they could make it. I thought nobody would find out. I thought I could make it. Famous last words, it's like the redneck. This is the famous last words for a redneck. Hold my beer and watch this. Maybe you've been there, you didn't think anybody would find out. I thought I would make it. I've been there so many times. It's like you just wish everything would just become okay because you just say, I didn't think it'd turn out this way. You know, in this little story, the majority of them, there's 200 people on this boat. The majority of them feel this nice, light wind come in. And they're like, we can make it. It's going to be okay. And sometimes life is like that. It just seems like it's, you know, this light, warm breeze comes in, and they forget it's winter time. Now, someone from Utah would never do that because we know the weather's changing in 10 minutes. But they're not like that. They think it's, you know, a nice, light breeze. It's warm. Let's sail on. And isn't it difficult when you know something and you really understand it and you think we shouldn't do that, but the majority wants to do it? Here's the lesson. We don't go through every open door, and we don't take every opportunity that comes our way, because sometimes they're a warm, gentle breeze hiding the fact that it's winter. You don't take every opportunity. We started Eastlake to be an opportunity for people to come and just sort of kick the tires of what it is to follow Jesus and be at a safe place to do that. And they're trying to figure out, where is there a safe place for the wintertime? And the majority of people, like, well, let's go. And it's a lot of pressure sometimes. I'm not saying I've ever felt the majority of 200 people, but I do know what it is to feel the pressure of the majority at work saying we should do it a certain way, or the majority of my family saying we should do it a certain way, or my friends, the majority of them say we should do it a certain way, or culture says do it a certain way. I've felt that pressure before. And it comes down to what path I'll choose. My friend Steve Hyden passed away last year from colon cancer. It was quite an alarming thing for me. It forced me to finally go and have the whatever that is. And I'll tell you what, it's worse than whatever anybody told you. So I understand why men never go. It's a bad, bad thing. It's like sitting on a fire hydrant and someone's just loosening it. You know, it's a terrible thing. But it got me going. I went to the doctor and I did that. And like I said, it's a church for everyone, even me. So. And Steve was a very cautious person. We grew up all of our lives. Steve was the type of guy that wherever the line was, he stayed way back here. I was the type of guy that went up to the line and put my foot over to see what would happen. So we were quite a pair. And I was honored to get to do his wedding. I was a pastor then, which shocked everybody. And he asked me if I would do his wedding. So a lot of our friends got together, and we went down there, and we all hung out at this restaurant. We're having Mexican food, just a blast, margaritas. Everybody's having a great time. And in case you're wondering, we're a church that believes it's okay to drink. We just say, don't get drunk. So I don't know why I'm putting that in there, but commercial. So anyways, so we're at this restaurant, Mexican food, hanging out. And it's over, and my friend tells me, my buddy, we all grew up together in a small little town, and he says, oh, we're going to go over to a hotel afterwards. We've got a room. We're all going to hang out with Steve. I said, oh, that sounds fun, you know. He says, we got a little surprise for Steve. I said, oh, okay, we got a little gift for him. I'm thinking, I didn't pitch in any money. How much do you need? And he says, oh, that's okay. We got it all taken care of. We got a little surprise for Steve when we get over there. We rented a stripper. And I'm thinking, stripper. He says, yeah. And he's so excited. He goes, she's going to do the feather dance. And I'm thinking, is she going to wear anything else but feathers? What, a stripper? Oh, yeah, we're going to really get Steve this time. And you know, I'm immediately in a spot because I'm married. And when I got married, I said, hey, I'm just going to look at one girl and you're it. And I'm not going to do that. And so I didn't, you know, I'm thinking, and then I start thinking, I have to do the wedding tomorrow, and these yobos are going to take him over and look at a stripper all night, and he's going to come and make his vows to his wife, and I'm thinking, I can't do this. And so I'm in my moment. The majority says, stripper, the light breeze is blowing by. Just put your sail up and move on, man. Look the other way. You in any place like that in your life? The majority says something, the warm breeze says, just don't get into it. And I finally had to say, hey, man, my good friend to this day, like a brother, I said, hey, I can't go if there's going to be a stripper there. And I don't think that's the best thing for Steve. And that day, it did stop it. And we had a great wedding the next day. But you do have to choose. You do have to say, what path am I on? What path am I on? Because whatever path you're on, it leads to a certain place. We'd have had a certain type of wedding, we'd had a certain type of reception, and he would have had a certain type of marriage had we just stayed on that path and went through that evening, and nobody would have died from it. But we got on a different path. We had a different wedding and a different reception, and he was a different type of husband, and those guys all became different type of husbands too, as did I, little in different path. Now the second thing, and look at your notes here, is choose my reaction. So the first thing is find the reason. There's two really good questions. Who made a wrong choice, and it's not always you? And the second thing is, did I pick a wrong path? Watch out for the majority. Then the second thing is, choose my reaction. So something happens and I get to choose my reaction. I'm going to read this kind of long part of the Bible. The sailors couldn't turn the ship into the wind, so they gave up and let it run before the gale. The terrible storm raged for many days, blotting out the sun and the stars, until at last all hope was gone. Finally, Paul called the crew together and said, "Men, you should have listened to me." Now stop right there. This is how I know Paul is a man of God, because he waited several days before he said, neener, told you so. If that had been me, man, 10 minutes into it, I said, yeah, right, who looked at me now? Didn't want to listen to me, huh? Paul waits several days. Good advice for husbands, too, on that one. So, you should have listened to me in the first place and not left Crete. You should have avoided all the damage and loss, but take courage. None of you will lose your lives, even though the ship will go down. Isn't that the truth? Sometimes, you know, when you make a mistake, you wish, oh, God, please, just come on, don't let anything happen. But it does. The ship goes down. So take courage, for I believe God, it will be just as he said. So the ship will go down, but you're going to have your life and get to go again. And this idea, take courage. Take courage. Do you know when you really need courage? When you don't have it. Courage doesn't get you to Jesus. Courage is something you have after you've been with Jesus. And Paul says, listen, God's, you're going to go through some stuff, but he'll be with you in this. And if you're in a storm right now, he'll be with you in this. And I want to show you a video of a woman at one of our churches that's been through an awful lot, and I want you to be able to see the courage that she got after she invited Jesus into her pain. And so check this out.
I remember being about 8 or 9 years old. We had a really close family and did lots of things with, you know, extended family, but didn't know that the people closest to me would cause me so much pain. One cousin in particular would take advantage of a couple of us, and I was one of them. So at age 8 is when I remember at first being abused sexually. I was molested by one of my cousins. It continued for a few years. Also, there was, you know, verbal and physical abuse in my family. So yeah, I just kept it all inside. I never told anyone. Which, you know, made it worse. Because not only, you know, do you feel dirty and shameful, but to be afraid that someone else would think that about you as well. It was just really, really hard to deal with. At about 19 or 20, I found myself with, you know, someone that I knew that was a friend. And so I was raped. Then I got pregnant as a result of the rape and didn't know how to tell my parents and just distraught because, you know, of the way it happened. So I decided to get an abortion. Dealing with, you know, verbal abuse and physical abuse and even sexual abuse, it's like, well, you know, what good am I? And, you know, what is there good about me? What value do I bring to the world? All of the emotions of, you know, not feeling worthy, you know, the shame and the guilt, and I just, you know, wanted it to all end. So I did try to commit suicide. I'd hit my head and run into this wall time after again. It's just like, okay, you know, how do I get out of this mess? A neighbor invited me to church and we said, okay, want to go. I joined and became active and involved in different activities, the women's group, Bible study, missions trip, just got really plugged in. we were connecting with other good people that had real life problems too, that, you know, I wasn't the only one suffering from, you know, past regrets and hurts. But beyond the community, I started spending time in the Word and reading on my own and really letting the words of God seep into my heart to know that God has a hope and a plan for me. Hearing that I was the head and not the tail, you know, just hearing the promises of God in church and also discussing them in our Bible studies just really started opening my eyes. And I felt like I was just getting revelation after revelation about who I was in Christ, about who God was, and how, you know, bad things happen, but that He always turns it around. I just felt more at peace. I just felt more comfortable in my own skin, like I didn't have to run and hide anymore. So that's really when I felt the biggest growth in my spiritual walk. The burden started getting lifted slowly, little by little, that guilt started disappearing. As I was going through all of the abuse and pain and just turmoil, I didn't feel worthy of anything. I didn't feel valuable. I didn't feel pretty or smart. But after, you know, years of walking with Christ and reading His Word and just really letting it sink in that Jesus loves us individually, personally, and knowing how He sees me, you know, and knowing that I am pretty and that I am valuable, that I am smart and that I am lovable. That's just something that, you know, even the painful memories can't take away. Like, no one can take that away from you.
Nikki said, I am pretty, and I am smart, and I am lovable. And I guess we could have a church where everybody comes in and feels like they have to be perfect. But if you had to be perfect, I couldn't go. And the idea of seeing someone's life like that, at times when you see it, it seems very extreme. You're like, whoa, that is so extreme. But the truth is, as I watched that for the first time, I thought, well, I've been in some of that. And the truth is, as most of us watch it, we can take a piece of that story and go, yeah, I understand that pain. Not from the sidelines. I know what it is to be in that kind of pain. And it's not just to bring up the emotion, it's to get in touch with the emotion. Because so often we compartmentalize that away, and the reason we do that is because we think there's never any hope there. The best I can do is to lock it up in a closet and nail it shut and put a dresser drawer in front of it and just hope nobody ever asks what's back there. Maybe I can forget too. But we can't. It's still painful. And Nikki's story is so awesome because she's like, you know, I decided to let Jesus into my pain. And it's great. It happened by coming to a church. And if you know somebody that maybe that could be their start, then you can invite them too. And maybe that could be their start. But it wasn't church that did it. It was starting to step into a relationship with Jesus and allowing Jesus into the pain. Maybe the first person ever to give Him a chance to turn the hurt into hope. And that's the bottom line today. The bottom line today is I can go through the pain if I let Jesus into my pain. This story ends, it says, when the boat is all cracking up and what's going to happen, and it says, then the rest of you jump in and go on planks and other pieces of the boat. So in this way, they all got to the land safely. You just circle that like 27 times, just circle it. They all got to the land safely. They all got to the land safely. They all got to the land safely. They all got there safely. And so will you. You can go through the pain if you let Jesus into the pain. And that's something that you get to do in the privacy of your own heart. God is greater than your pain. He's not embarrassed by your pain. He won't shun you. You won't be rejected. You won't be scolded. He will step into your pain, and like Nikki, you'll have a story to say, I'm beautiful, I'm smart, I'm lovable. The things that God stole from me, the Lord has returned. And I made it safely through it.